mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, happening around town with the theme of Forward Together, LGBTQ plus Spectrum of Findlay is hosting their annual Pride in the Park event this Saturday. Also in our salute to service this morning in honor of Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, we'll meet a U.S. Army combat engineer who is also an Olympic hopeful in the sport of women's rugby sevens. And in today's Throwback Thursday segment, Taking Cover, one girl's story of growing up in the middle of the Iranian Revolution, what the country used to be, and her perspective on the way it altered the course of modern history. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, May 30th, 2024. So yesterday, when I first heard the news of the Marathon Oil ConocoPhillips merger, I said to myself, well, this is going to cause some people to be a little nervous. You remember, it was more than a decade ago that Marathon Oil and Marathon Petroleum split into two separate companies, Marathon Oil being the exploration part of the business and Marathon Petroleum being the downstream or the refining and distribution part of the business. And there was a time when, you know, obviously that was just one company, but the two split. Marathon Oil became a totally separate company, moved to Houston. Marathon Petroleum stayed in Findlay. It's kind of interesting to think, had that not happened, then we might be talking about a big upheaval in the local economy. But no, they are two completely separate companies, separate logos, separate operations. One is not really related to the other. The only thing they share is the name. And it was not helped yesterday when the Associated Press, with their story on the ConocoPhillips Marathon Oil merger, sent out photographs, stock photographs, one of a Conoco gas station and the other of a Marathon gas station. So they use the Marathon Petroleum logo for the gas station in the story about Marathon Oil. So that didn't help. And I think when the whole story broke, I don't know how many of the national reporters really knew that there were two separate companies. And why would they? I mean, there's, you know, all of these different companies. There's no way of the national reporters probably not expected to know the intricacies of these sorts of things. But clarified, it is not a big thing for the city of Findlay. But so there you go. Just to clarify, it was interesting, though. People say, oh, what does this mean? What does this mean? It doesn't really mean anything. Anyway. Good morning to you. Some of the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. The numbers are in from the Memorial Day weekend from the Ohio State Highway Patrol. Officials say there were 14 deadly crashes across the state. 17 people tragically lost their lives over the Memorial Day weekend. Five of those involved people driving under the influence. The good news is that number of fatal crashes down from last year, 26 people died over the holiday weekend. So we did much, much better. In addition, the Highway Patrol says 1,000 distracted driving citations were issued over the Memorial Day weekend. And that has certainly been a point of emphasis for law enforcement officers in Ohio this year. I did not see, what I would like to know is how many traffic tickets did they write for speeding? How many speeding tickets did they write? Because they were everywhere. Law enforcement was everywhere the Memorial Day weekend. So hopefully you did not have a negative encounter. They did more than 1,000. It was like, 1,300 driver assist calls, responses, that kind of thing. So hopefully if you had an interaction with a law enforcement officer, it was so that they could help you, not that they could cite you. But they were everywhere. By the way, this is kind of interesting. New insurance data analyzed by Insurify. They find that the drivers most likely to be cited for speeding are drivers of Subaru, the Subaru BRZ. I'm not familiar with that model vehicle, the Subaru BRZ. They found that nearly 24%, almost one in four, of drivers of that particular model vehicle have received at least one speeding ticket. That is the top most cited vehicle model on the road. Drivers of the Hyundai Genesis Coupe also more likely to have at least one speeding violation than the average American. For comparison, 8.3% of American drivers have at least one speeding ticket on their record. So the Hyundai Genesis Coupe is higher than that. The Subaru BRZ, way higher than that. The least likely to have a speeding ticket, drivers of the Tesla Model Y. Only 2% of those drivers have a ticket on their record. So, kind of interesting. Other popular vehicles to be pulled over for speeding, the Volkswagen GTI, Nissan 350Z, no big surprise there, and the Chevy Cruze Limited. Those are the... So if you have any of those vehicles, just sell them. Sell them right now, because before you get yourself into trouble, that's... Or at the very least, be very careful with your lead foot. Couple of other items here among the first things you need to know this morning. By the way, speaking of Memorial Day and people on the roads, people traveling, we're into vacation season. If you are good, and by the way, I'm going to be traveling this weekend, taking a little extra time off. I know, just had a long weekend, but doing another long weekend this weekend. I will not be here tomorrow, will not be here on Monday. And if you are traveling the next time you go on vacation, what's the last thing you do before you leave home on vacation? 75% of Americans say that they clean their house before they go on vacation. This was a survey of 2,000 travelers. The average respondent says they begin preparing for their trip 2 weeks in advance. And 75%, 3 in 4, will clean the house before going on vacation because you don't want to return. There's nothing worse than coming back to a messy home. So put in the time before you leave. That way you don't have to deal with it when you get back. You can, and because nothing will kill the vibe of a vacation, the refreshing vibe of a vacation, quicker than arriving home to a messy house. So clean your home before you go on vacation. 77% will do the laundry before they leave. We usually do the laundry before we leave just so we have clean laundry to take with us on vacation. And by extension, you clean the rest of your clothes. But anyway, 66% will do the dishes. 58% clean the bathroom before heading out. 51%, it says here, dread the idea of coming home from a vacation to a messy house. 27% admit cleaning their suitcase was maybe the most difficult thing. And clean your suitcase. Do you do that? Do you clean your suitcase? I guess we probably should, shouldn't we? I don't know that I've ever necessarily cleaned the suitcase. You kind of tidy it up, and but in terms of actually physically cleaning, I don't know. Anyway, so maybe wipe it down on the outside because it can get dirty and scuffed up on the luggage carousel at the airport, you know, or throwing it in and out of the car. But anyway, just kind of interesting number of people that clean the house before they go on vacation. Here is good news. The giant pandas are coming back. Once again, the giant pandas will call the nation's capital home. The National Zoo announced this week, yesterday in fact, that two pandas from China will return to Washington, D.C. later this year. You remember the zoo has been without pandas after the three that they had to be returned to China last year. And it was blamed on rising tensions between the two countries politically. and that China was kind of being petty and said, well, fine, we want our pandas back. Well, now, apparently they smoothed over their differences, at least to the point where they are getting the pandas back. One will be headed to D.C. that is the grandson of the two pandas that left the zoo. China and the U.S. started their so-called panda diplomacy in 1972 under President Richard Nixon. So good to see that the National Zoo is going to get their pandas back, because that was like one of the biggest attractions of the National Zoo in Washington, D.C., were the giant pandas until they had to send them back. So that's cool. And this may be this day's news of most lasting significance. It is the invention of a new spoon in Japan, and it is finally for sale. A new spoon. That's right. This is not just any spoon, though. The innovative utensil zaps your tongue to make food taste more salty. This is one of the things. We get too much sodium in our diet, but we generally enjoy the taste of added salt to our foods. This will, it says, zap your tongue to make food taste more salty. Ideally, it could help people use less real sodium in their foods. The spoon will sell for about $127, and the first run will only be 200 of them. So very limited edition. Overseas sales are set to begin next year. So that would include, you know, the United States. This is from Japan. Excessive sodium intake associated with high blood pressure, strokes, other health concerns. So this could be a big, big deal. Although I'm not sure that I like the idea of zapping my tongue in order to, or you could just lick a 9-volt battery, I guess. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather. Plenty of sunshine expected today with a high around 70. Clear skies tonight, a low around 50. The Ohio State Highway Patrol is reporting a drop in fatal crashes over the Memorial Day weekend. The Highway Patrol says this year there were 14 crashes resulting in 17 deaths on Ohio's roadways. That compares to last year when there were 24 crashes and 26 people killed in those crashes. Over the holiday weekend, the Highway Patrol says it also issued more than 1,000 distracted driving citations and performed more than 1,900 motorist assists. Get more in the story on our website. It's been announced that Marathon Oil, based out of Houston, is being sold to ConocoPhillips. Findlay Mayor Christina Mern points out that this is not Marathon Petroleum Corporation, which is based in Findlay. As many recall, Marathon Petroleum and Marathon Oil split in 2011, dividing into two separate companies. Marathon Oil specializes in oil exploration and production, while Marathon Petroleum Corporation in Findlay is a petroleum refining, marketing, and transportation company. The mayor says the sale of Marathon Oil will not have a direct impact on the city of Findlay. Get more in the story on our website. School bus drivers are in demand in districts all over Ohio. Could an AI-generated solution used in Colorado help the Buckeye State?
One district in Colorado Springs started the year hoping to hire around 110 bus drivers, but only about 60 showed up. So they shifted gears and turned to AI. The company Hop Skip Drive analyzed the routes, and the district was able to cut the amount of bus routes by nearly half, supplemented by some ride-sharing services. The district says this software has increased on-time arrivals and saved it more than $500,000.
That's ONN's Yolanda Harris reporting. The Tiffin Police Department is congratulating the graduates of its Citizens Academy. Police Chief David Pauley says he's confident that they've all gained a deeper and more comprehensive understanding of law enforcement in general and the operations of the Tiffin Police Department in particular. See a picture of the graduates in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Our cover story this morning, this weekend, LGBTQ plus Spectrum of Findlay hosting their annual Pride in the Park event. To kick off Pride Month, we are joined from Spectrum by Jessica Grosso, Jesse Smith, Welcome to the Jessies this morning. Thank you very much for dropping by this morning. A studio full of Jessies. It's interesting. You've done Pride in the Park for a number of years, but it just so happens this year it's kind of fortuitous. It actually falls on the first of the month, so you literally get to kick off the month with this event.
Yes, yeah, we're very excited about Pride this year. Pride has been going on for a little over 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
We started in 2003 as a small potluck, just a small gathering in the park, and it has grown to this wonderful celebration.
How cool is that to see, you know, what this has become over the course of all that time, from just a small gathering to, you know, this big celebration in the park where so many people will come out?
It's been wonderful just to be able to see our community thrive and grow. Mm-hmm. And support each other has been great.
It's kind of interesting. That leads to this question. The theme for the Pride in the Park event is Forward Together. Kind of explain what that is, where that theme comes from, and you know, what you mean by that, or what you hope to accomplish with that.
Sure. So growth in any type of community, you know, depends on forward movement. Mm-hmm. And all of its members supporting each other. So, you know, having that forward movement together, moving forward together.
Yeah. And this has been, something that in this community, I don't want to say it's been more of a challenge necessarily than in other communities, but certainly, you know, you are aware this is a very conservative community. This is a very progressive idea, the mm-hmm. whole concept of Pride Month. So how has that been, or what has that been like to see the community more openly embrace this movement, if you will?
Yeah, it's been really great. So I've lived in Findlay for about 12 years now. Mm-hmm. And when I first moved here, it was challenging to find that community and to yeah. seek out those people and that support. And, you know, it's just speaking from experience, it might be a little harder in this community to find that community and that support, but mm-hmm. it does exist. I yeah. mean, Findlay is a very diverse and welcoming community, and Spectrum and Pride really focus on getting that visibility out there and letting people know that there is support and community for them here.
It's not been without its road bumps along the way, but I did think it was kind of interesting, maybe as a demonstration of that. Visit Findlay shared the post on Facebook about the Pride in the Park event on Saturday, and I noticed the reactions, a lot of likes, some love emojis, you know, to reaction, but there weren't any negative reactions. And maybe that's because either A, people are more open and accepting of that, or maybe it's because those who don't are content to just, you know, ignore it, which either way is maybe, can you count that a success?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, to be a member of the LGBTQ plus community doesn't mean you have to subscribe to, you know, a certain set of beliefs. Mm-hmm. There's members from all walks of life. You know, that visibility and acceptance is really affirming for our community.
And part of that is really the goal of Pride Month, is to put a human face on individuals within this community. It's harder to hate someone when you see them face to face.
Absolutely. You know, if it's just a nameless, faceless idea,
yeah.
You know, you don't have any personal attachment to it. But when it's your neighbor or your coworker or, you know, somebody you love, it makes it a little more personal. Yeah.
It changes yeah. things. So let's talk a little bit about the event again on Saturday. It's at Riverside Park, right?
Yes.
So give us all of the details.
Yeah, we can give you some highlights. We're very excited this weekend. We're very excited to, you know, kick off, like you said, on the 1st of June, kicking mm-hmm. off Pride Month here in Findlay. So we're kicking off our events actually on Friday. So we have a happy hour. We have some participating bars downtown with some Pride-themed drinks. If you go to a couple of those locations where you're going to get a free sticker at the after party on Saturday. So our events on Saturday, it's going to be a jam-packed day. Mm-hmm. So we're starting off at 10 a.m. at Riverside Park with Pride in the Park. We're going to have vendors, food trucks, entertainment, a kids zone, and it's welcome and free for everyone. So entrance is free to get into the mm-hmm. park. So everyone come down and check that out from 10 to 4 at Riverside Park.
And then we're be a great day for
yeah, it's looking like it. And then we're going to follow that up with the after party. We have Crawford Street, East Crawford Street in front of Finley Brewing shut down. And so we're going to have a stage and more food trucks. And we have local breweries and wineries coming out to sell adult beverages. But everyone is welcome. You know, 21 plus, you know, obviously for the adult beverages. Right. But everyone is welcome.
So the event in the park during the daylight hours is kind of the family event. And then for the grown-ups, a big after party downtown.
Yes, exactly.
And now this is kicking off Pride Month. Are there other events, other things that you'll be doing through the course of the month, you know, to, again, celebrate the entire month of Pride?
Yeah, so, you know, Spectrum's really thrilled to bring this event to Finley here on June 1st, but, you know, make sure to check our calendar and our Facebook page to see what other events we have going on throughout the month. There are a lot of other Pride events going on throughout Northwest Ohio and through the state throughout the entire month. The Buckeye Flame is a really great resource for people to check out to see what's going on in other places.
And I know you are very active in the community really throughout the year. I mean, Pride Month, obviously, in June is sort of a highlight, and this is sort of the signature event of that. But you are active and busy in the community throughout the year.
Yes, we have support groups for both youth and adults that we hold regularly throughout the month. You know, we've done food drives, we've had community meals together, and other different events and community supports.
For those who are interested in learning more about Spectrum, about the Pride movement, and you know, just learning more about the neighbors they share the community with, that's really the idea behind all of this. How do they reach out?
Facebook is the best. Our social medias have the most up-to-date information, so Facebook and Instagram both.
Okay, and you mentioned a lot of support groups and things of that nature. For those who, this is a big thing for individuals, for families that may be struggling with their identity in any way, shape, or form. How do folks reach out if they are in need or want to learn more on that aspect of things?
Again, through our social medias, we also have, you know, our email address that is monitored and responded to. Mm-hmm. Our youth group meets on the...
I don't mean to put you on the spot here.
On the first and third Wednesdays of the month at 7 p.m. In the office. And then our adult group, which is called Holden Space, meets every other Friday from 7 p.m. to 8:30 in the office.
And are those drop-in programs for anyone? Mm-hmm. You don't have to register, don't have to...
you can drop in. They're free.
Okay.
You know, and we just come together and support each other. And, and sometimes we just kind of have, you know... community.
Yeah, exactly. It's what it's all about. The Pride in the Park event, Forward Together, is happening on Saturday. And again, what are the hours for that?
10 to 4 for Pride in the Park and 7 to 11 for the after party.
Okay, downtown. And we've got a link up for more information at our webpage. You can go to goodmornings.net. Again, Jessica Grosso, Jesse Smith from LGBTQ+ Spectrum of Finley, kicking off Pride Month this Saturday. And thanks to both of you for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much, Chris.
Well, in our salute to service this morning, as we close out Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, we are joined by a U.S. Army soldier and Olympic hopeful to discuss how she honors her Polynesian culture both in uniform as a combat engineer and on the field as an Olympic hopeful. Sergeant Joanne Favasi is with us this morning. Sergeant, as a first-generation American and obviously the first Army soldier in your family, talk a little bit about your path to Army service. How did this come about for you?
So my grandfather and my uncle, they both served in the military. I am the youngest of seven children, and due to my rebellious nature as a child, my mom would make jokes that I belonged in the Army, and it's always been in the back of my mind since then. I learned about this world-class athlete program in the Army, and soon thereafter I joined, and my mom knew it would bring me discipline and structure. It's also given me so much more than that. I have like stability, and I have a bigger purpose, and just being able to pursue my career in rugby while serving in the Army has been amazing for me.
Yeah. As you mentioned, you're saying you're not just a soldier, but also an Olympic hopeful. And as you said, it's the sport of rugby sevens. Talk a little bit about your passion for this sport. Where does that come from?
So I'm come from a large Polynesian family. My dad and my siblings played rugby, so it's really just embedded in our DNA. Mm-hmm. I used to grow up watching my brother play at his high school games, and you know, I would watch him make these big tackles and scoring these tries. So I really took to it and got to find a girls' team that we were able to do the same thing as the boys, the same rules, same everything, and it was just a sport for me, and I never looked back since then.
So this is a big part of your family and the larger AAPI community as a whole. What does that mean to be able to pursue that passion in the Army?
Yes, so being a first Tongan rugby Olympian for Team USA, it was natural for me to feel, you know, a sense of responsibility for younger AAPI girls, and representation matters, right? My niece plays on the national team now, and it's nice to see more girls that look like me. But being able to do it while it's serving in the Army has just been that much more help for me, and they've helped to further fuel my rugby career, and mm-hmm. I've learned so many values from the Army, and they give me a sense of security, belonging, and confidence that I can continue to pursue my passion.
Well, it's really interesting. You were mentioning earlier there actually is a program that actually helped you pursue this passion for rugby and actually probably take you further than maybe what you would have been able to accomplish on your own. Is that right?
Yes. The World Class Athlete Program, they directly support me in this dream. Being able to represent the United States in more ways than one, both as a soldier and an athlete. Mm-hmm. This program in the Army, you know, I receive world-class training and preparation for competitions that are really all over the world.
Wow, that is awesome. So as we mentioned, you are currently competing for a spot on Team USA for Rugby Sevens in the upcoming Paris Olympics. Where are you in that journey? What is next? Kind of give us the lowdown on what's happening with that right now.
Yes, so I was able to compete in the 2016 Olympics. I was a travel reserve in the 2020 Olympics.
Okay.
Our team just took gold at the 2023 Pan American Games. So now we are 8 weeks out from the Paris Olympics, and I am literally at the end of my third go trying to get another Olympic dream. And next is selections, and I'm just ready to support my team, whether I'll be here at home supporting them or in Paris with them.
Well, obviously, we hope that we will see you in Paris. And let me ask you this then, assuming that you will be there with the team, who's going to be the biggest competition in the Olympic Rugby Sevens event?
Oh, there's a lot of teams. You know, these teams are really everyone stepping up to the challenge, but I think our hardest competition would be either between New Zealand and Australia.
Okay. New Zealand and Australia. I just want to make sure that I know which teams to watch other than Team USA once the Olympics arrive. So we'll watch for those teams down under. But I think you can take them. Sergeant Joanne Favasi is with us this morning, combat engineer in the U.S. Army and Olympic hopeful in rugby sevens. Where do we get more information, Sergeant?
Yes, so for more information on how you can be all you can be in the Army, you can visit goarmy.com.
Thanks very much for your time. Certainly best of luck in all of your Olympic qualifiers and all of that that has yet to come. Hope to see you in Paris here in a few weeks, and thanks very much for your time. Thanks for your service.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Dateline Ann Arbor, Michigan for this first story, where a man who was facing a court hearing or facing a charge of driving with a suspended license. Keep that in mind. It's very important. The charge was driving with a suspended license. He is now in even more trouble with the law after he logged into his court hearing via Zoom while driving. Now, again, mind you, his charge was driving with a suspended license, and he logged into his Zoom court meeting while driving. A video of the hearing shows the defendant, one Corey Harris, dialing into the Zoom call earlier this month as he was pulling into a parking lot at his doctor's office. The judge looks confused for a moment and then confirmed with Mr. Harris's lawyer that he was in court for driving with a suspended license. Court, the judge had to check. He is accused of driving on a suspended license, right? The judge was so incredulous that this guy was this dumb. Because he logged into a Zoom call while driving, the judge revoked Mr. Harris's bond and instructed him to turn himself in to the county jail. Oh, Mr. Harris probably is left wondering, what did I do wrong? let's see here. Elsewhere in the broken news, Florida woman who was spotted nude on a public pier in Naples reportedly got the brilliant idea to evade police by diving into the water. File that under the category of sounded like a good idea at the time. She's like, oh, I'll dive into the water. They'll never catch me. The problem is, she eventually would have to come out of the water, right? All they had to do is just, she's not going to become a mermaid. All they had to do is just kind of wait for her. The whole thing did not end well for 20-year-old Alyssa Razzo. Beach Patrol spotted her as she made her way to the shore. The Naples Police Department had received multiple reports that a couple of people were getting overly romantic behind a local pier on Memorial Day. And her alleged partner, Ms. Razzo's alleged partner, Zach Westfield, told police that they had intended to swim and jump off the pier, but wound up, they wound up doing more than that. Let's just put it that way. When the mood strikes, you roll with it, I guess. The two have been charged with trespassing and disturbing the peace. let's see. Police in Colorado Springs are looking for a person who rammed a stolen vehicle into a local smoke shop on Wednesday morning. The owner of the shop tells police that in addition to causing thousands of dollars worth of damages, the suspect made off with several vaping devices. That seems like a long way to go just to steal some vapes, you know? A stolen car, slam it into the building. There's got to be an easier way. If that's your end goal, that seems like going through an awful lot of trouble just to steal a few vapes. Okay. Something weird at an air show on Long Island over the weekend. So you've got all kinds of fans. They're gathered for the Bethpage Air Show on Long Island for Memorial Day weekend. When, what do you know, video is captured of a UFO at the air show. A UFO. The video shows a small spherical object flying across the sky at lightning speed during a performance by the Navy's Blue Angels. A little bonus show there. I mean, the Blue Angels are impressive by themselves, but then you get a UFO as well. The appearance of the sphere in the video lasts only for less than a second, but it shoots across the sky at lightning speed, even faster than the Blue Angels. A report filed with the National UFO Reporting Center says the object was as high as 41,000 feet. Not sure how they could tell that, but that's what it says here. So, got a little bit more than they bargained for at the air show. Google makes the broken news this morning. Now, this is an interesting story. You know, just recently they rolled out their artificial intelligence-powered search. This is supposed to be an enhanced search and an enhanced web search system using AI. And it seems that the whole thing is off to a bit of a rocky start. The search engine's new tool gives AI-generated summaries of search results, but some users have noticed some unusual and even dangerous outputs. One response tells readers that eating a small rock every day is recommended by geologists at UC Berkeley. Eating a small rock every day is what you should do, according to the geologists. It is UC Berkeley, so, you know, they're a little weird in that part of California, so you never know. It could be their recommendation, but no, it's not. Some of the other screenshots from odd and unusual advice. One screenshot suggests that people could use glue to help the cheese stick to your pizza. Use glue. Add glue to your pizza to help the cheese stick. That's what it says. And one response by the Google AI search tool actually says that doctors recommend smoking 2 to 3 cigarettes per day during pregnancy. Here's a hint, they do not. So, Google responded to the report by saying that they are taking swift action to make adjustments where appropriate. I would hope so. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is the viral video of the day. You may have seen this, a video of a marathon runner by the name of Luciana Lauren Chow, who is attempting to cross the finish line in first place at a race in Brazil recently. So she's a marathon runner. She's, is she from Brazil or she, anyway, the marathon is in Brazil. It's a half marathon, actually. And she is about to take first place when her children run up to her and try to hug her before she's crossed the finish line. She kind of pushes her kids away or ignores her kids, small kids, they're like 2-3 years old. She ignores her kids so that she can finish the race. And some people have given her grief over this, saying that she's a mom. Why did she keep running and not stop to hug her kids? Ms. Lauren Chow has posted a response online saying, I was finishing the race, and that my, you know, the second place person was right behind me. I wanted to win the race. She said her husband actually let their kids run up to her before they crossed the finish line, but she's not blaming him. There was no way he could have known, she said, that the second competitor was very close to me. The runner later celebrated with her daughters and her husband on the winner's platform. She did win the race, but she's taking all kinds of grief because she didn't stop to hug her kids while she was about to win this marathon. I wouldn't have either. I mean, you can hug your kids anytime. I'd be happy to hug my kids after I finish, but not before. Yeah, so anyway, she's taking all kinds of grief from that. It just doesn't seem right. Anyway, there you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Glantz with OSU Extension. It's planting season. Drivers will be sharing roads with tractors and farm machinery. Be alert for slow-moving vehicles, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this spring to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. You know, social media was supposed to be a forum for people to express themselves, but a new survey finds that people aren't expressing their true selves. And it's not just influencers pretending to be someone that they're not. This survey of 2,000 people, commissioned by Lenovo, finds nearly half of Gen Zers feel like they're leading a double life online and in the real world. Leading a double life. 46% say the life that they present online is not the one that they present to others in the real world. 31% say their online life is a secret from their family and friends. Apparently, their family and friends aren't following them on social media, I guess. And by the way, this is not just a Gen Z thing. Their older counterparts, similar numbers. 27% of millennials say that they hide online stuff from their offline family and friends. 53% of those in the Gen Z demographic admit that they find it easier to express themselves online than offline. In fact, 68% say they feel a disconnect between their online selves and their actual selves. 27% of all age groups in the survey say that they are hiding some aspect of their lives, some aspect of themselves online. 38% of millennials felt that way versus 18% of Gen Xers and just 8% of baby boomers. So baby boomers are most likely to be, you know, what you see, what you get online. So what are we hiding? What is everybody hiding? The survey finds that 22% of the folks in the survey have clearer likes and dislikes online than what they would admit publicly. 21% were more comfortable admitting their ambitions in life online versus offline. 17% will share their fears online, but not in real life. 19% will air their political beliefs online more readily than in real life. Not a big surprise. We see that all the time. And 15% keep other opinions and values hidden behind a screen name. Last week, the president of Iran was killed in a helicopter crash, and as the country mourned his death and prepared for an unexpected presidential election, experts in the Middle East and all of the news shows are pointing out that regardless of that tragedy and whoever is elected as Iran's next president, regardless of how all of that shakes out, nothing in Iran is going to change, regardless of who becomes the next president, because the president of that country is little more than a figurehead. Ever since the Iranian Revolution of 1979, which gave rise to the Islamic extremism that we know today, true leadership has rested with the state's religious leader, first the Ayatollah Khomeini, and since 1989, Ali Khamenei. And that brings us to today's Throwback Thursday. Nayusha Homanufar is the daughter of an Iranian father and French mother, and although she spent her early childhood in Pittsburgh, the family moved back to her father's native country when she was just 5 years old. Now, you may wonder why he would do that, but it was a very different country prior to 1979. And now, Nyusha has written a book about what life was like in Iran before, during, and after that very turbulent time. It's called Taking Cover, One Girl's Story of Growing Up During the Iranian Revolution. From February of 2019, it is today's Throwback Thursday. At the age of five, your family ups and moves to Iran. Of course, the obvious question is, why?
Well, my father actually moved us from Pittsburgh in 1976. So those years in Iran were actually quite prosperous and quite nice. It was a very nice place for people to live. My mother, who had previously visited Iran, really loved it there. So she looked forward to starting a new life there. And all of that kind of came to a grinding halt 3 years into it in 1979 when the Iranian Revolution happened. And as you know, everything just turned upside down. And suddenly we had to contend with a very hardcore Islamic Republic. So it was really quite a shift for everybody.
It paints a very different picture than I think most people would have of Iran, even pre-revolution.
No, you're absolutely right, and it's very unfortunate that that's the case. But it used to be that when the Shah was ruling the country, even though he had many people who were against him because they thought that he was a Western puppet, but he was doing so much to develop the country and building so many schools and universities and hospitals and railroads and so on, that life between the 50s and the mid to late 70s was really good. And for people who had Western educations, like my father did, it was a really good time for them to be in Iran as young men and women. And so it was very unfortunate that, you know, all of the dreams and hopes that people like my dad had came crashing down.
So then why did he stay? Was he not able to leave in the days after the revolution or in the years after the revolution? Or why is it that he decided to stay?
I think the initial reaction to that is that nobody really thought the Iranian Revolution would last for as long as it did. In its early days, and even in its early years, all the dialogue I was hearing around me from all of the grown-ups was that this is not going to last. It can't possibly last. You know, they don't have a leg to stand on. And it just went from there. You know, all of the events just snowballed and snowballed and snowballed until he finally had to decide to leave. But initially, everyone just thought, oh, you know, this is just a matter of time before these religious clerics crash and burn.
And, of course, as all of this is going on, you've got the Iranian, what we call the Iranian hostage crisis. Was that discussed at the time as maybe one of those things that might lead to the relatively quick toppling of the regime? You're holding these Americans. America's going to come and liberate the country and free their hostages.
Yes. I mean, in hindsight, I was only 8 years old, so it was difficult for me to make sense of everything that was happening.
Right.
But yes, that was one of the reasons why I think people didn't think this could last. They really thought that President Carter would interfere with the events of what was happening in Iran. He had been a strong supporter of the Shah. And everyone thought that, you know, America would come in and rescue Iran from what was happening and release us from these religious authorities.
Yeah. Sadly, it's not America's finest moment either in dealing with that particular crisis. But I thought what was really interesting in the book, and you talk about this, is that while the country was radically changing outside your doors in your apartment where you were living at the time, while all of this is going on, you were still very Western inside your, you know, the friendly confines of your immediate surroundings.
Yes, Chris, you're absolutely right. Many Iranians lived that way. And what ended up happening soon after the revolution was that people learned to live their inside lives at home, where they were free to do whatever they wanted and act however they wanted. And then they had to live their outside lives or their outside personas. And particularly for women, that meant that they had to come out of the house covered from head to toe. Only the oval of the face and the hands from the wrist down could show. And women had to be very conscious about how they presented themselves in public, you know, to not attract any unwanted attention to themselves for fear that the Islamic authorities might arrest them or harass them for un-Islamic behaviors.
Now, obviously, as you mentioned,
You were very young during those initial years of the beginnings of the revolution that you were kind of caught up in. So what is your memory about what life was like? I mean, how much of all of that that you were just describing were you consciously aware of?
I think when you're such a young child, your initial reaction to the world is how the adults in your life are behaving, and you're really affected by that. Mm-hmm. You're not really capable of understanding politics in the same way that a grown-up can. So yes, I understood that something bad was happening,
yeah.
But my reaction and my fear mostly was by seeing how disrupted my own little family circle was, by hearing my dad having all these very heated political debates with friends and neighbors and family, and everyone just seemed so agitated and nervous and anxious about what was going on. And that can be the most unsettling thing to a child. The events of that day made it so that nobody felt like they were in control of anything, and the unknown was really scary for everybody.
How old were you when you moved back to the U.S.?
I was 17 years old. We left Iran in 1987, but we had to stay in France for a few months.
What ultimately was this deciding factor that your family said, okay, enough is enough?
My arrest in 1986, that was a pivotal moment. Mm. I was taken in by the Zainab sisters, which is a term for the religious patrol police that were driving around the streets monitoring the women and how they were dressed. That was one of the pivotal moments. But finally, in 1987, my French mother had just had enough. Because, as I said, everyone thought the revolution wouldn't last for as long as it did. But
right.
It did. And so finally she'd had enough. And my aunt, Minu, who I mentioned in the book, talked to my dad and basically gave him the permission to make the decision to leave. She said we had to go and that we couldn't think about the rest of the family there. We had to think about ourselves.
Mm.
And that was the pivotal moment where my dad was finally able to just pick up and walk into the uncertainty of you know, being an immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
And we left Iran with only $800 in our pockets.
Yeah, it's interesting, even though you had gone to Iran from the United States and you were living in the United, your family was in the United States before, you come back and I would imagine you're looked at very differently than when you left, and you have this whole sense of being immigrants once again and probably not exactly welcomed with open arms, I wouldn't imagine.
Many of the kids that I interacted with at school didn't really know much about Iran and the events that happened there.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that blanket of security. But, you know, you're still coming in as a teenager and trying to settle in 11th grade,
yeah,
where people already have their friends. And I had a very difficult time relating to essentially normal teenagers with
mm-hmm.
normal everyday problems, you know, such as having a bad hair day, and which were completely normal at the time. But I thought,
yeah,
I don't even know how to talk to you.
Completely
I just came from a war-torn country.
Definitely a fish out of water. And as we mentioned, here is this revolution that nobody thought was going to last at the time, and we are marking 40 years, and obviously everyone knows about the current state of U.S.-Iranian relations, or the lack thereof. When you look at Iran today, what comes to mind? What crosses your mind? What are your thoughts?
I'm just really saddened. Mm-hmm. I think in the back of my mind, and maybe in the back of the minds of many Iranians who live in exile, there was always this hope that they would go back home and we would be able to pick up where we left off, and that just kept getting further and further away.
You still have hope that maybe it could go back to the way it was?
I think it would be difficult to say that it would go back to the way it was, but at least hopefully someday it could at least not be such an authoritarian regime, forcing people to behave and act a certain way, that at some point hopefully people can be free again to choose to practice the religion if they want to, or to choose to wear certain things if they want to, and not be forced to do it.
From February of 2019, a very powerful Throwback Thursday feature this morning. You want to learn more about the book and its author, head to our webpage, go to goodmornings.net. And with that, we finish up our podcast this morning. Remember, for more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program, make sure to visit our website, again, goodmornings.net, for all of that. Plus, you can sign up for our daily email newsletter. There's a link there to reach out directly via email if there's something you want to share.
connect with us on social media and more. Again, goodmornings.net. No podcast tomorrow or Monday, taking a little extended R&R this weekend, coming back on Tuesday with details of this year's Summer Safety Bicycle Rodeo. So, until Tuesday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.